You're tuned in to listener-supported community radio, KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio is hiring a program director to manage our programming department. This full-time position requires proven experience in program directing, radio audio production, management, and supervisory skills with volunteers, with an emphasis on teamwork and a collaborative setting, and the ability to work under strict deadlines. KBOO Community Radio is an equal opportunity and affirmative action employer. The deadline to apply for this position is Saturday, October 3rd. More information can be found at kboo.fm/employment.
Donate to KBOO. Support KBOO. Give to KBOO now. Help KBOO reach our fall fundraising goal of $80,000. Got some extra funds you can donate right now? Then go to kboo.fm today and click on the donate button. Join the thousands of KBOO members who believe in volunteer-powered, listener-supported community radio today.
Good afternoon, good evening, good morning, whatever time zone you're in, whatever part of the day or night it is. Once again, this is Culture in Motion, twice monthly show on KBOO as well as Spotify. My co-host Ryan Danley and I like to invite guests on from all over. We talk about the intersections between art, culture, music, politics, and activism. It goes without saying we're in a very interesting time right now because all those things are kind of at the fore. And that's what brings us to our very special guest, Joe Bean Keller, artist, activist, mentor, educator, public speaker, musician. Joe, the list goes on. How are you doing today?
I'm doing good, Mike. I'm doing good, and I appreciate you asking me to be on your program.
Right on. Joe Bean, how would you describe yourself?
I guess I'm just a multifaceted blessing from God, you know, that he allowed me to see things a little differently and clearer than others, and so it gives me a bunch of options, because the things that I do are really not out of the norm. It doesn't seem to me, but it seems like I do a lot of different things. So I've just been blessed with the ability to, you know, be multi-talented. And like I say, I'm not very educated. I'm a wise man. I've been blessed with the wisdom and stuff. And I think that actually a lot of the for me.
Are you born and raised in Portland, Oregon?
Born and raised in Portland. Been here since 1956. We'll be 64 years old pretty soon.
Okay. And you and I, we've been acquainted through different Portland cable access shows, different events over the years in the community, but I got to know you a little bit better a few years back. I think it was in 2015 when you asked me if I could pin a verse, a rap verse for this song called Before There Was Trayvon, and we did a video for it with other local artists. For the listeners, will you tell us about that project and what the significance was in relation to your own son, Deontay Keller, being murdered by Portland police?
Yeah, well, my son was murdered, and Deontay was murdered in 1996. And that was before you had social media and a lot of other things. You know, you pretty much had the Oregonian newspaper, television, media, in which you had to basically go by and stuff. And so throughout the years after my son was murdered, then there was Kendra James, the Jahar Perez shooting, you know, all these murders just kind of like they seemed to just kind of snowball, and nobody wasn't really recognized. Them. But then when the Trayvon Martin issue came out, all of a sudden there was national attention. It kind of woke people up, you know, it kind of woke up society. And I guess it's because since ours was local and didn't have the, you know, because the Northwest over here, we're not kind of in that national mainstream of where a lot of the big medias are running through it and so forth. So they didn't pick up on all of these things and to take it to that level. And then plus at the same time, if our local media does not assist us by sending it out to their national affiliates, it's never going to get out there as well either.
Right.
So that wasn't happening. And so after the Trayvon Martin situation came up, I kept hearing all of this about Trayvon. But then I'm thinking to myself, I'm saying, well, here's Joe Bean Keller right here. Here's Kenny James and Kendra, you know, Kendra's family. Here's all these other families and so forth that are not even getting any kind of acknowledgement about, you know, their stories. Mm-hmm. And so I just woke up with this, you know, and it's before there was Trayvon popped in my head, and I had this old school music line, you know, from Tony that was there. And one day I was just kind of hearing that sound, and before you know it, it's just like, I caught the hook. And once the hook came in, I said, now I got to find the right people to come in and put the ingredients in with me. And that's where I had to find you, because I know that you're, you know, Mike Crenshaw, you're the guy when it comes to putting the lyrics in and talking about reality of life. Because some people are afraid to voice what's really necessary. They're kind of, like I've told somebody recently, and as I put up on a post, I say, you can't be an activist and you can't be a strong talker with a pacifier in your mouth.
Ooh, that's a good one.
Right.
Yeah, I like that a lot.
You see what I'm saying? Right. And people that know me and know that I've been an activist for over 40 some odd years, they know I have no pacifier. So that's the thing right there. So you got to be, you know, and I know that you didn't have one.
No, our third eyes are connected. I was actually, being a lyricist, I was driving down the street and some bars came to me, and it was the fastest try to pacify, but I classified as asinine. So,
right.
Page,
and that's it. So yeah, so that's how that came about, basically. And I said, we got to start, you know, we can't forget, you know, our local people. And that's the same thing with the March on Washington. We were still kind of, you know, the George Floyd came in, and all of a sudden now everybody, you know, the NAACP, everybody wants to get on this national bandwagon, but we still kept forgetting about our locals and stuff. And so when I, you know, when the March on Washington came about, basically I decided to put this project together. Started out with just me, then my mom, and then all of a sudden I said, I can't go to Washington, D.C. without these other families that I care about so much. That's kind of how that whole thing just kind of snowballed into.
So you organized how many families to go to D.C. from Portland?
Well, there were 11 families all together, 11 different families, two people from each family that came out. So it was actually, they ended up being 26 of us all together. We represented Portland strong. We had some shirts that I got designed, that made with all of the families' names on them as well, too, that we wore to dinner. We came in group when they came off the airplane, because 20 of them flew together on the same plane, so they came in Portland strong as well, too. Uh-huh. And I raised over $18,000, basically, to pay for all the expenses. But, you know, it was round trip airfare, you know, 4-star-plus hotel, had a shuttle for them, you know, for the pick them up from the airport the day of the march. They had a shuttle that was available for 6 hours, so if people got tired, the shuttle could get them back and forth to the hotel and things like that. So try to make it as convenient as possible, because like I said, these families, along with myself, we've already lost the ultimate. We've lost, you know, a loved one to police violence and stuff. And so that's what it was all about. And to be up there in the midst, like I said, we made history. We made Portland's history, and I took Chris Fuzel as well, too, videographer with us. So we have video caption of all of this. So going to be working on putting a documentary together, basically, of Portland and Washington, Washington, D.C., and let it be a part of history so that our kids will learn them. We were here, so when they look at the 1963 march, then they can look at the 2020 march and say that Portland represented. So when kids, like, say, you know, and I'm looking at this being a project that may not be visible for the next 10, 15 years, because that's when it'd be important, because it has, it's a part of history. Portland made history. If you weren't there, it can't be duplicated.
Oh, sorry. I'm a little bumpy in my connection. I was wondering, as somebody who's been involved in the game for a really long time, and clearly an important one, and like has a personal touch as the as we get into the 110, 120 days of protests downtown, you know, and we start to see, you know, factions and a lot of different like talk about like how we're moving forward and things like that. I mean, how do you feel about the whole situation? Do you feel like it's accomplishing what we need? Do you think energy needs to be focused anywhere else? Do you feel, how do you feel about the whole?
My thing is this right here. There's a bandwagon that has been jumped on, basically, and because all this initiated from the George Floyd situation, that's where it came from, you know, because someone lost their life to police. And that's where it started at. It ran that. But then all of a sudden, all of these other entities started falling inside of that. And so I have problem with that because of the fact that it swayed things from the focus of where we're at. And I can understand these groups if they have these issues and this is what they want to do. But why did you have to wait until someone had to lose their lives by police to want to bring up your issue? You could have brought that up at any time. You could be marching for that at any time. So as it's tainted, what the situation is, how far, what is it going to take us to get back on course? Because we've got so far off, the police murders are not even a segment of this now. It's more the riots, the different groups now with the shooting happening and so forth. And I think it's by design, it's kind of a placement of let's put a blanket over this whole situation, because that's what's going to leave it possible for these things to happen again. And so I'm really kind of concerned, because without the proper leadership, because we don't have the proper leadership here in Portland that knows how to stand up and start, you know, funneling this stuff back into its right place, I don't know what it's going to take. Thank God that we just have, you know, this smoke, you know, and everything else is kind of slowing this stuff down for a minute. There may be a wake-up call within this. People may start rethinking and try to get back on track, because that's what we need to get back on track of what the movement actually was all about from the beginning.
Well, I think, you know, a lot of people are mobilized, rightfully so. I think a lot of people get the intersections between other systems of oppression and violence at work in society and police violence. But, you know, I do understand that the reason people took to the streets after May 25th was because another Black person had been killed.
Right.
You know, and since then, there have been different strains of anti-authoritarianism that have emerged in response to the fact that instead of the police being accountable for what their culture has exacted upon our communities, they've responded to the uprising and the protests with more violence and more repression.
Right.
So then that became, you know, the spotlight with the feds and this, that, and the other. But Joe Bean, I want to ask you, somebody that's been around longer than me, I imagine you being a younger person, there hasn't been a time in your life where you weren't aware of police murder of Black people.
It's been a long time. I mean, excuse me. Because I have to go back to 1975, which we were 17 years old, 16, 17 years old. A friend of mine, Ricky Johnson, was shot in the back of the head by a Portland police officer, Ricky Police, in his house upstairs on Gattenbein and Shaver Street.
Mm.
Yeah, I mean, so, and then you got the Lloyd Stevenson's, you know, the choke 'em, smoke 'em situation that happened at the 7-Eleven. I mean, so I've been around through a lot of police murders. And that's why I have to stay diligent about making sure that people realize that Portland, we can look at a national scale, but if we don't take care of home right here, we're going to still keep on finding ourselves in the same position, because it's just been a repeat of what's taking place. And then there's another story about this guy. His name was Cleophas. Oh, I got it, because I got, he's in 1963. He was murdered by the Portland police as well, too. Cleophas Rhodes. You can go back and check his story. Cleophas Rhodes. Yeah, 1963. I mean, so that's how far this goes back. And it's been an ongoing process. And each time, like say after the Ricky Johnson murder, you know, there was a lot of change that was made, you know, through the, you know, system itself, but it still wasn't enough, because if people don't engage after things are being made and do follow through, that's where the problem comes in at. We get, you know, ignited basically when a situation happens. And then once it starts to kind of filter out, then all of a sudden we get laxed, and then we leave ourselves open again. This has to be a constant fight that never stops. I mean, I've been fighting for 24 years, it'd be 25 years in February. And I'll fight for the rest of my life. So this is something I wake up to and I go to sleep to, not something I just get in when the day comes. And so that's where we have to start being more diligent, just, you know, and finding people that really are long-term fighters, because that's what's going to transition and make the changes as necessary.
We're aware of the fact that there is some leadership here, black leadership specifically, younger leadership, that are pushing some pretty concrete demands.
Right.
To defund the police, and that are asking Mayor Ted Wheeler to either defund the police budget significantly, I think to the tune of some seven figures, or resign. What do you think about the push to defund the police as a concrete objective?
When you say defund, you have to really kind of clarify defunding itself. Because, you know, we're talking about doing away with the police system and recreating a new system. That's where I think a lot of confusion is at. There hasn't really been a clarity about what do you really mean about defunding, and different groups are looking at and seeing that differently and talking about it differently. If you're talking about defunding, you know, particular things, moving the money into other channels to where it'd be more useful at, like say, connecting, because we're going to have a police force of some sort, because if somebody breaks into my house, I got to call somebody. I can't just call Joe Blow and tell, because he may be want to rob me the next time. You see what I'm saying? So we have to have some kind of unity in this process, but we have to be able to weed out all of the things in the system that are negative, that, because like say, when I grew up, back in the 70s and stuff, we had community relations programs and things like that. So the police were a part of the community. They were friends. You knew who they were. They were relationships that were being built and stuff. And so if you called the police back then, your officer friendly will come to the house and just check on you, just make sure, or do a welfare check or anything without a problem. Now, when you call the police, you have to call them, in defense, mm-hmm. because you have to put yourself in a defensive mode, because you don't know what might happen. Because this call, you know, you may have one officer that comes and everything is fine, but then he may call another car, may come, and this officer in this other car may come with a whole different mindset. And all of a sudden, where you've been in a situation that had been already defused, all of a sudden he creates a fused situation. He refuses the situation because of the fact that he's going off of whatever he heard on air, basically, you know, the situation, but not understanding that the situation may have already been handled. So we have to really kind of look at how this whole process will go when you talk about defunding. So I would pull the money out of things and put it back into retraining. We'll put it back into, you have to just figure out what do you do with it? What do you do with the funds itself? I mean, that's just how I feel. And my feelings may not be the same as others, and I can respect how others feel. And, you know, because sometimes I like listening to others, because I like to know how you feel about that, Mike, as well, too.
Yeah. You know, I believe that defunding is a strategy on a continuum, and on that continuum, ultimately we need to abolish police as they exist today. If we look at historically, you know, in the South, the police emerged out of slave patrols. And in the North, they were basically petty criminals who were hired by the wealthy to dole out consequences for property crimes. In both cases, the institution of policing in this country was set up to protect and serve. So what they were protecting was the private property of the wealthy in terms of black people's bodies being commodity. Get back on the plantation.
You know? Right.
They were serving the wealthy and protecting private property. So I see that institution not as an institution that actually helps us be safer in our communities. It's evolved, even though there might be some officers that do a stellar job on an individual basis, the culture of policing is a culture that tends to criminalize
right
people in the community and escalate situations to the point of violence and sometimes lethal force. And that's something that has to change. But to be honest with you, you know, looking at the current political climate and sensing the amount of hatred and conservative and reactionary attitudes that are so much a part of this country, I might have to move up out of here before we see a lot of the changes that I'm working towards.
Right.
I think that the fear of being harmed by somebody that's part of a criminal element or doesn't have your best interest in mind, I think that's a very powerful and legitimate fear. And I think that fear is strong enough in people that when they hear us say defund the police or abolish the police, their immediate reaction is, well, then the streets aren't going to be safe. Even though I think that we have to create other ways of caring for each other in our communities, I do understand the fear that people feel. And I feel like we've got a long way to go before a mass movement is going to understand that the police should be done away with. It'll take decades for us to build the type of mutual aid and community defense networks that we have to have in place instead of the police.
Instead of the police, right. And that's all I'm saying.
It's just overnight.
What do you put in its place, basically? That's the key right there and stuff. And that's where we have to start at trying to figure out. And that's why I say longevity is, because this is a process that has to be started and figured out, and it's going to take time.
So
people have to really be willing to take years of time to dedicate to trying to make change in order to, like I said, if you want to abolish the police, we're replacing it with this right here. And if we spend this many years working on this process, and that's the key right there. So we can, like I say, people can march, they can talk about it all they want to, but if they're not willing to sit at the table and take that time out that's necessary, we're going to still be back in that same position. There has to be longevity. There has to be willingness to, you know, not get swayed. And if this is really your cause, and if you want to fight for that cause, you got to stick to it. It's a life, maybe a lifetime cause.
Donovan Smith, big shout out to Glenn Waco and others. You know, they did a study with the support of the ACLU and scientists to talk about the harmful effects of the tear gas, right? So now Ted Wheeler is finally, after 105 such days of protests, has come out issuing a ban on police use of tear gas. Now, in response to that, the Oregon State Police issued a statement that went something to the effect of, if we can't use tear gas, then we don't have any other way to de-escalate a situation, and we might have to rely on lethal force. So what the police are doing is the state police in this instance is they're threatening. They're saying, if we can't harm you with the tear gas, we're going to shoot you to death with our guns.
Right.
To me, that's not just irresponsible. It's not just dangerous. That's criminal. Mob rule to me.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, if they're like not going to even like take the advice of like a mayor or a governor or anything, and even in there, like, what are we going to do? I don't know. We're at a point here where there's no turning back, and you know, and the bubble has burst. You know,
right? That's the problem right there. It's what do you really do? And I don't even think that too many people really know what to do at this time right now, because the fact that we've never been in this position. We're in a position to where we've got a pandemic going on. You got the Black Lives Matter going on. Now we got wildfires going on. I mean, our state is in a serious state of mind right now. Mm-hmm. And our officials are not ready for all of this at one time. It's too much going on at one time. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just too much responsibility that's needed. You know, before, the chores were kind of given a little bit here, a little bit there, and here and there, but they've never all fallen like this at one time. Yeah. We're in a hell of a place right now, my man. It's tough.
I'm looking at it. I think, you know, as a young person, there were intervals between national disasters. You know,
right.
We had a little bit of time to shake off the last tragedy. before the next one came. Right now, it's like everything all the time. And I'm looking at my youth, you know, I'm looking at these kids, realizing that they're growing up, and this is their baseline. This is normal.
This is normal. Yeah, right. This is their experience. I mean, like I say, because I did the Mount St. Helens thing, and I did all, you know, so I've been through disasters throughout time, you know, just even like with riots. I mean, I was in Chicago in the '60s and stuff, you know, so I've been through that. Been the riots here in Portland in the '70s. I mean, so I've been through a lot of different things, but at the same time, to have it all just taking place in one time. I mean, and like I say, you go from one I can't breathe to now you walk outside and you can't breathe. I mean,
whether it's the tear gas or the fires.
The fires, whatever, either way it go. I mean, we're still in we can't breathe. We can't, you know, we're isolated in our houses again, you know, for another cause besides the pandemic. Now we're isolated because we can't go outside because the smoke is too, you know, hazardous out there. I mean, so Portland, we haven't experienced this. So I know our officials right now are really going through a lot, you know, so yeah.
So we got a few minutes left on Culture of Motion, and I want to ask both of you this question, Ryan and Joe B. I grew up watching the Klan, you know, march and rally and get on talk shows and talk about the race war, the coming race war. They're always pushing for a race war. And as a kid, I was like, well, that's one of the worst ideas I can think of. But, with the current rise in, alt-right, neo-fascist groups, the Boogaloo Boys, Patriot Prayer, Proud Boys, running around, flexing with their weapons in public and so forth. What do you think is going to happen?
Hmm. You want to go first, Ryan?
You know, living in Denver in the 90s, you know, I've seen this similar in an uprise in white supremacist movement, and the, you know, like all of a sudden, like all the punk rock kids that I skateboarded with and went to shows with, and all of a sudden we're all like Nazis, you know, and it became a, you know, like a real dividing faction between everybody, of course. I mean, you know, and I think that we're just seeing it now, and we're not seeing it and from a historical point of view. And, you know, through that time period, you know, I read a lot, and you know, I mean, people used to, you know, this is just the new Klan walking down the street with their flags. You know what I mean? It exists. And I think that everybody needs to be reminded. And I think maybe we all got kind of cozy during the Obama years that everything was kind of good, and everybody kind of got out of damage control. You know, that there wasn't like a real, like this, like, you know, like everything's kind of good and we all can kind of like, you know, like, you know, white liberals just started doing yoga and like, you know, and like, and you know, when Nazis got beat up at shows, people were like, oh, like, you guys got to stop that. And like, oh, violence is wrong. And you know, all this stuff. And like, and people in movements knew that the wolves were at the door, that they had just been held back for so long. And then it just, as it started to seep in and, you know, it found the holes in the defense to come in with, like, you know, and I mean, the new groups are, you know, that they have non-white members and they have gay members and they have, you know what I mean? So like, there's a lot of like weird muddy water. Now, if you're experienced with this, you understand that it's all the same no matter what. And it's all the same crap that they've been talking about since this rolled out, since they were shooting Lincoln, you know what I mean? Like, it's the same mentality. So, I mean, the thing is, it's going to take another group of people to push this back. We're not going to degress. There's no putting people back in their place or anything like that. We have to move forward. But the white supremacy movement in this world is not going to go quietly. Mm-hmm. And what we're seeing is that they're not going to go quietly now, whether it be through their policing, whether it be through the loyalists to a white supremacist government, they're not going to go quietly. And this is the pimple about to burst, you know, that here they are, the same mentalities flowing, the same slogans as the Klan marching through Washington, you know, in the 60s, you know, I mean, so what is it going to happen? Yes, it's going to take the work. It's going to take the leverage of people, and I think for the first time in my life, I see way more people interested in it. I mean, you know, a lot of those years when the Nazis were floating around, we kind of we're on our own, you know, and but now there's more people out there. So I mean, I guess I sadly maybe am a little optimistic, but it's still doesn't change the fact that it's pretty scary to have truckloads of Trump flags are essentially like a swastika riding through town all the time, you know.
Well, and the problem is now is that too we're dealing with more gun power. Mm. There's more people at arms now, mm-hmm. and that's the scary part about it, you know. Black, white, or no matter what, you know. And so, and then you got people in a defensive mode. So people are living in fear right now and stuff. And so fear is going to be what's going to ignite something. And then you have a president that's kind of opened the door up to where you can just say what you want to and get away with it. And it's all right. And be whoever you want to be because I'm going to protect you and so forth. And so when you put all those elements together, it's just a melting pot for, you know, that's going to fuel a fire. There's no choice but to happen and so forth in time. How it's going to happen, we don't know, but is it going to happen? Yes, something is going to happen. I mean, and it's not going to be nice, but like I say, but everybody's arming up. And so when you get so many people that are arming up, and they're not arming up with little pea shooters anymore. These are real guns they're using. These are AKs and everything else. So these folks are coming at arms. And so it's not going to be nice, and it's going to be bloody if it does happen. We pray that it doesn't, you know, because that's not the way it should be, but you can't control humans. This is human nature, just like animal nature. When it comes to when you feel threatened, when animals are threatened, what do? They put themselves in a position to where they want to put the defense up. And so anything that comes their way, they're going to be in a defensive mode and ready to strike. And that's what society has been putting themselves in a position to do the same thing. So we have to really be careful of how we play this out from here on out.
Joe B. Keller, it's been an honor talking to you. Thanks for coming on the show today.
Thank you, Mike Cronshaw. I appreciate you. Appreciate you talking to you, Ryan.
All right, appreciate you coming out.
You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM and streaming online at kboo.fm.